I'm really excited about our next guest. I read his article yesterday in the Wall Street Journal. I thought it was really, really interesting. A brief history of IRS political targeting, how this is not a new thing, though I happen to think it's one of the worst, but it's not new. And he's with us. He's written some awesome books. Jim Bovard. Could be James Bovard. And he's written, I'm looking at all kinds of cool books like Freedom Chains, Lost Rights, the attention deficit democracy, that'd be interesting, and terrorism and tyranny. That would be kind of what I'd say we're going through right now, terrorism and tyranny. James Bovard, welcome to the Janine Turner Show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate that.
Yeah, look at all your great books. Well, thank you for joining us. And before I get too carried away with your book, Terrorism and Tyranny, I want to talk about your article, which I thought was fascinating, in the Wall Street Journal yesterday in the opinion section, how this is nothing new. You know, the IRS has been used to harass and intimidate people in incredible ways. As you even talk about in 1925, though, before FDR, the Internal Revenue Commissioner David Blair personally delivered a demand of $10 million in back taxes to Michigan's Republican Senator James Cousins, who had launched an investigation of the Bureau of Internal Revenue. So it's been a little tough for anyone to stand up against the IRS for years. And I'm hoping, though, we can, and it even changed, some of the rules changed after Watergate, but I don't know, it's still happening, isn't it, Jim?
Well, some of the rules changed after Watergate because Nixon was caught with so much brazen abuse of the IRS. Mm-hmm. He was following John F. Kennedy's footsteps. But you've had all these laws, you've had all these regulations that basically says that government can't do people dirty in the, with taxes, and it really has not stopped the politicians, it's not stopped the political appointees. And it doesn't matter what happens with this scandal, as long as the tax code continues to be incomprehensible, it's only a question of time until there's another politician who uses that to punish his enemies or to try to suppress dissent.
So in other words, well put, when government is so big that the people can't understand it, which leads us to Federalist 62, written by James Madison or Alexander Hamilton, they're not sure which says that the laws are so voluminous that they can't be read or so incoherent that they cannot be understood. Why have a republic? Because we won't know what's going on. So when they make these bills so big, they do it purposefully so that we can't keep tabs on the situation. Is that sort of what you're saying?
Well, that's part of it, but the thing we have is an attention deficit democracy, and most of the congressmen themselves are not paying attention because Congress tends to do a horrible job of oversight of the IRS, in part because many of the congressmen are cowardly. They're afraid the IRS would go after them. But also, there was a report, an AP report about a dozen years ago, that showed that congressmen on a routine basis send notes to the IRS and ask the IRS to audit people who the congressmen don't like.
Wow. Both sides of the aisle, huh?
Well, both sides of the aisle, yes. I mean, this is a horrendous abuse of power. This is worse than most of the other abuses of power of the IRS over the last 75 years. And yet there has been very little attention to this in Washington. And as far as I know, this is ongoing. The congressman can still send a note to the IRS and saying, well, you know, there's John Smith, a newspaper columnist in my home district, who's giving me hell.
We need to do something about that then, Jim Bovard. How are we going to do that? I mean, for these congressmen to just be, well, and of course, we're looking back here at your article. FDR did it, and Kennedy did it, and Clinton did it big time. So how do we stop that? I love this show to have be a solution-oriented show, you know, not living the problem, living the solution. And what can we do?
Drink heavily.
No, that's not an answer.
Yeah, I mean,
Well, I guess the fact that you just brought awareness to the fact that a congressman can do this, I mean, gives us the opportunity to call and say, hey, this has got to stop. I mean, we got to need a law against this.
I agree, but there have been lots of laws that would say that the government cannot violate people's constitutional rights, and it hasn't stopped the government yet. There are Freedom of Information Act laws which say the government has to disclose what it does. The government routinely violates that. Mm-hmm. It's
fine to have another law, but as long as the government is so powerful and the laws and regulations are vague, then there's going to be all that arbitrary power,
and the politicians love that power because it gives them a chance to punish their enemies.
Yeah, but you say as long as there's this big power, so you say that as if there could be something done about it, as long as there is, that means something could, if we put a stop to this, so how would you... I mean, well, I have my idea. I'll just tell you real quick. One of my ideas is the Truth Act, just as in regards to these laws being so voluminous and so incoherent, is that T stands for limiting the bills to 30 to 300 pages, R, preferably 30. R means that they have to be read by the congressmen and senators. U means they need to be understood. T means they have to testify that they've read and they understood. And H means they have to read this law on the floor, and C-SPAN can cover it or whatever, the whole law, so that we could watch it, so we can be heard. And I don't know, I'm marching through the halls with that one this summer. Good luck for me, right? But I mean, if there's some kind of something we can kind of do, if you say as long as, what can we do to make the government smaller?
Yeah, well, something like that would be a step in the right direction. It's interesting. I've watched Congress off and on for a few decades, and it's interesting watching congressmen at hearings, because most of the time, the congressmen do not think of their own questions that they ask, and their aides write down a question. And a lot of these congressmen don't read so good. I mean, they just really literally come across as not very literate, and especially on policy literate, because if you talk to them face-to-face and ask them, well, why did you vote for this and that, and they're kind of like, well, I don't know. You know, it's like talking to Jethro Bodine, brain surgeon.
Not all of them now. Not all of them.
I
agree. A lot of good people.
Okay,
I can't stereotype.
Well, I hear what you're saying.
I hear what you're saying. I think lawyers are writing these laws. Special interest groups are writing these laws, and they're getting passed when nobody knows what's in them. And this is part of the problem. And I think the same thing's happening with the IRS. You know, it's just too big.
Yes. I mean, there's far too much power in the IRS, but much of that power has come because of the tax laws. And going back for at least 40 years, we've had study after study that said that the tax laws have to be simplified in order for people to understand them. Mm-hmm. Congress doesn't give a patootie about that, because the congressmen profit by writing these laws. The special interests give them campaign contributions, or they can do favors for their friends. And congressmen don't care that people's rights and liberties don't really have
Obamacare is going to have 47 new laws, 47 new codes.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this is a Pandora's box, because
that no one understands.
What that means is your government bureaucrat will have arbitrary power over your private citizen. This is something that's actually very popular in Washington, D.C., and this is what happens when you have more laws than people can comprehend.
Yeah, it's exactly what James Madison and Alexander Hamilton were warning us about. That's why we want small government. And, I just have to say, what's that?
I was trying to make a joke. As someone from the state of Virginia, I was going to say it must have been Madison, because it was a good idea.
Yeah, I know, but I love Alexander Hamilton too. But yes, I know we love Virginia. But the it's amazing to me yesterday to hear Axelrod say, the president, the government's just so vast. How can he know everything? It's just too vast. He actually used those words. I couldn't believe it. They who want the biggest government, the United States of America has ever encountered. Now Axelrod's going, it's just too vast. He can't possibly know everything. I'm like, exactly. It's too big. This is a good. What we're going through the past week is a big example of why it's too big.
Well, and it's a very good example, too, because it's a great lesson on how people should not blindly trust politicians or the government, because the government's probably doing a lot more mischief than what people realize. And this whole default notion that we should trust our leaders, I mean, this is an un-American idea.
Well, and that leads me to another thing that I was talking about this week. Jim, we're speaking with James Bovard, who's written all these amazing, amazing books, including Terrorism and Tyranny. And you have a new one we'll want to talk about in just a minute. But Obama at that Ohio State commencement gave this amazing speech where he said, oh, you've been raised to think that, government's terrible, and government's too big, and you've been raised to fear tyranny. You should reject those voices. That's what he said. And it's just so amazing. That's the most un-American statement I've ever heard in my life, because we were founded and built by immigrants who wanted to get away from tyranny. It's sort of the essence of us to not trust government. It's what the Constitution's all about. It's what the Declaration's all about. Not trust government. Yes, we should not reject those voices.
At least in the old days, that's how it was. But I think the last 30, 40, 70 years, Americans have been taught in school and elsewhere to put the presidents on a pedestal, and it doesn't matter the president or the party. I mean, we're supposed to think of them as our national leaders for every aspect of our lives, instead of simply the chief executive for the federal government, which has limited powers. So I mean, there are so many different layers of nonsense. It's almost like trying to peel an onion. As far as getting back to the roots of all
these, and the reason that can happen is because the president can just kind of walk around and be the figurehead and say some cute little sentences, whereas Congress has these massive laws that nobody understands, which is why they lose confidence in Congress. But I have to say, I love watching this past week or two with Congress, with Benghazi and everything I've been fighting for here at the Janine Turner Show. You know that they're actually doing these committees and they're questioning, and you're watching the check of power. You know, but anyway, listen, I have about a minute left. Tell me about, you have so many cool books. I'd love for you to come back and talk about terrorism and tyranny. But you have a new book out. I'm sure you want to talk about that one, right?
Sure. It's Public Policy Hooligan. It's a memoir. It's available on Amazon Kindle. It's a story of a lot of my battles with federal agencies, some of the battles with politicians, and the story of being raised in the mountains of Virginia, dropping out of college, eventually deciding I wanted to be a writer, and eventually, you know, getting to D.C. and having my work publicly denounced by the chief of the FBI, the HUD secretary, the agriculture secretary, the postmaster general, and a lot of other political appointees, and just trying to raise hell and make enemies.
Like a true Virginian, huh?
Absolutely. That's the heritage.
Exactly. Well, I'm a Texan, you know. We're like, come and get it ourselves. So we're like, don't mess with Texas, that's for sure. Yeah, it is a healthy attitude, actually. In Texas, man, if we were to secede from the Union, we'd be okay. We would be just fine. Okay, listen, I hope you'll come back. Awesome speaking with you, James Bavard. I really appreciate it.